download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
Come on, all the nerds are doing it.
Download the TuneIn app today and listen to 95.3 The Score anywhere.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig. The rare Jim Schoenfeld reference on a sports show anywhere outside of Buffalo or New Jersey. As we welcome you back, or welcome you to, I should say, the 5 o'clock hour of Sports Talk on a magnificent Monday, kicking off championship week. As far as the University of Oregon, they've already salted away a couple of big championships over the weekend. The men, the outright Pac-12 title. The women, the Pac-12 tournament title. And now they just got to sit around and wait till Monday and learn who's going to be visiting. On Yonder will be paying a call on the University of Oregon. So just to set the dates, the Duck women will play either Friday, Sunday, the 20th or 22nd, or Saturday, Monday, the 21st and 23rd. Now, we know for a fact, if they don't suffer a stunning upset at Matt Knight Arena, the MOTA region is Saturday, Monday, the 28th and 30th. And as for the men, the Spokane dates, where a lot of people think they have a chance to go, especially if they continue to win, make a nice run in the dance, are Thursday, Saturday, the 19th and 21st, with Sacramento also available and would be a good draw on Friday and Sunday, the 20th and 22nd, with the goal being make it to Staples for the regional on the 26th and 28th. So I don't know if that affects anybody who wants to travel. I will travel to Portland. I will not travel anywhere else because the thought of getting in a plane, just not that appealing. The NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, and Major League Soccer are closing access to locker rooms and clubhouses to all non-essential personnel. They all put out a joint statement tonight. They just got it together. That was as of, I could do the math, 45 minutes ago. They consulted with infectious disease and public health experts. The NBA says the move is not to ban reporters, but to ensure the safety of players and staff in those areas. Now, as far as reporters and beat writers and the like doing their jobs, I assume they're still going to, you know, get together. For example, we don't go into the locker room after a football or basketball game. There's an interview room. So giving the issues, like they said, close contact, locker rooms and clubhouses. Okay, so there you go. Media access maintained in designated locations outside of the locker room and clubhouse setting. They're temporary, and it starts tomorrow.
So this is all, like, it sounds very good in practice that, okay, we're keeping the media members that are out and about doing random things throughout. Well, maybe not random things, but they're out and about more than the players that we know that are maybe mostly in our building that we're keeping clean and we're watching an eye on our staff and we're keeping everybody together and we're keeping an eye on what's everybody's touching and we're cleaning everything off. And it's, you know, we're trying to slow this down and we don't want to bring the quote dirty media members into our clean space. So we'll have one dirty room. That sounds fine. But also, like, you're telling the Premier League is telling players to not do handshakes before games, and then they're playing a very, you know, close sport the entire time where everybody is physically touching and guarding each other for 90 minutes on the field and then just doing their handshakes after the game anyways. And then they're letting thousands of fans into these stadiums and arenas anyways, but they're limiting, like, the 25 to 30 media members to a separate room outside the locker room. It seems like they're, I don't know. To me, it seems like they're missing the point a little bit.
Well, it's also, it's not a change because a lot of the times, you know, you see the players, you see the coaches interviewed in the interview room. I know that you're also used to seeing a horde of reporters around, you know, Mike Trout's locker and LeBron James' locker. So I am not going to speak and say they're doing the right or the wrong thing. What they did was consult with not politicians, but medical experts. So I've always been in favor of the science over the what the political agenda might be. So I'm going to let them play that hand. Excuse me.
But why is it just the media members that aren't allowed to get close to the like, are the fans, are they that far? Because I get you're trying to protect the players' health, so you're trying to limit, and I guess
the fans are not in the face. I mean, you see those media hordes around LeBron. They're within 4 feet of him.
It's
never like fans with that.
Well, I know, but you're just saying, okay, we'll have 20,000 people show up to an arena where you're sitting in way too tiny seats for people, and you're sitting within, you know, 15
basically
people
what you're saying
six
is
feet.
We're going to protect the players, the fans are on their own,
right?
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they're saying
we know they don't care about the fans, they only care about our money. Who are you kidding?
All right. get the coronavirus, but we want your dollars first.
Right. Could you leave us your debit card information in case? Although I tell you, I went to Trader Joe's this weekend. And I got some funny responses on Twitter because I went in and I had a cup of coffee that I brought with me. And it was about 3/4 of the way done and starting to not be so warm. So I was going to take the traditional Trader Joe's little cup, throw a nice shot in there to warm it up. And they were out. They were like, we're not giving out any more free samples. And I was like, all right, now I'm in a panic. We're at DEFCON 1. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to mankind.
Steve's coffee got moderately warm. It's not okay. It's just room temperature.
I can't tell you how close I said to asking, because I go in there a lot. I know them. Did anybody in your break room have a microwave? Maybe want to warm my coffee up a little bit while I shop? I did not do that. All right. 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Text us, 321-0824. Try us on Twitter. The water's fine. At Rick Nodgers for Nick, at Sports Talk 953 for me, at 953 the score for the station. I went in the reverse order that time and got it right, which I was maybe 20-80 to do. With all of that in mind, let's get to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Josh. Josh, how's it going?
Hey, Steve. Well, I got to warn you by saying that this is vent time for me because you guys are a lot cheaper than therapy. So,
all right.
The coronavirus is the only viable excuse for why the Blazers are playing so poorly.
Oh my God.
This last weekend was ridiculous. I am literally like, this team has given up. I mean, they've never been a good defensive team by any means. But there were so many times against both Phoenix and Sacramento that they looked inept on defense. Like, they weren't even trying. And I never in my wildest dreams thought that a Damian Lillard team would allow players just to give up. And it looks like they're just done for. They don't even care anymore.
No, in particular, I thought the performance against Phoenix in the fourth quarter was lame. And it you know, it wasn't a matter of the Suns shot well. They were about 50%. They shot well from three-point land, but they gave up a lot of easy buckets, a lot of second-chance points. Man, that Baines dude must have had six offensive rebounds in the freaking fourth quarter alone.
Well, yeah, and at this point, like, why even bring Nurk back? Just shut this thing down. I mean, we're going to mess around and end up getting the 8 seed probably and then just get boat raced by the Lakers, which is even worse. I mean, just give ourselves a shot in the lottery and see what happens. I mean, last time we were barely made the lottery, we ended up with Odinus. That was a bad thing, too, but we ended up with the number one pick. So, you know, I mean, I just think that the upside is way better than just to let the season go.
And, well, first of all,
I don't know what they're doing, but, I mean, the veterans on this team, Ariza, Carmelo, like none of them even look like they're interested in playing right now.
Well, you might be a little ambitious thinking they're just going to add Nurkic and make the playoffs. They're still 4.5 back. There's only like 19 games to go. So you also want to see how healthy is he? Is he back to 100%? His minutes are going to be limited. And plus, remember, these guys are players. When they're healthy, they want to play.
I know, but I'm just saying at this point, why even rush him? Like, let him practice and get his legs under him that way. Like, why even put him in at this point of the season? Have him a full-blown ready to go at the start of next season. I don't know. This is just, as a super fan, it's just, it's a really rough thing to watch from this point last year to what they are this year.
Yeah, well, he's not even coming back for a week, right? So
yeah,
he's only going to play about 16 games. It's just like, you know, like I said, these guys go their whole lives from high school through whatever. He's dying to get on the court. If he's healthy, I always say players play.
Well, the other frustrating thing to me is just watching them this weekend. I've been a huge fan of Whiteside this year. But even though he was having like 4 blocks each game, I watched him this weekend, and it was like, yeah, you got the one block, but what about the 9 layups you allowed before that? Like, it's just like he's given up as well.
No, I think they went through that period of right before the All-Star break where they made a run, and it was like, you know, are they going to heal up and get Collins back and Nurkic back and maybe even get all the way to a 7 seed? But I think the reality of what they are now has hit them, and they've hit a wall.
Well, the reality has set in for me that the Blazers are not going to make the playoffs. If they do, they're not going to make any waves. And what do I have after that? The Giants? They're going to be terrible, too. So it's going to be a long wait till football season.
All right. Thanks a lot, Josh. And he's a Titans fan. What does he have to look forward to there? Wow. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
He's also an Oregon State fan, so maybe a slighter bright spot.
Yeah, to this day, I'll say, from midfield, if Smitty would have just punted against Washington State, Oregon State goes 6-5 and makes a bowl game. So there is hope for this coming year.
Also, it's really kind of the downer when the only bright spot that you have to look forward to is Oregon State football. That's not a good sign. Derrick Henry, though, also a bright light at the end of the long summer tunnel.
For a Titan fan?
Yeah.
And to be quarterbacked by? Yeah, TBD. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Steven. Steven, a good Monday to you. How's it going?
Nope. Be gone!
History. He's in the archives. He's out of here. One of the things I meant to get to, and I have not... In the Oregon win over Stanford, the men, on Saturday, remember how well they shot the ball, you know, down the stretch. I mean, they came out in that first half. That was insane. I mean, they were scorching it. That had a very home comfort feel to it. I mean, in the first half, they ended up shooting 60%. From just the floor, 56% from downtown. And then in the second half, they cooled off to 54% and 50%. I mean, what a job shooting the ball. And it was kind of strange in that they only had 10 assists. Pritchard had five of them versus almost 30 buckets. It was a very strange statistical anomaly in that in both their guards ended up with four turnovers, and Richardson didn't even have a dime, but he shot the ball pretty well. And like I said, his in-the-lane floater game has gone next level. And yeah, some of you got my insane reference. I said, with his floater game in the lane, he must have been a really big fan of that 90s band that started in Eugene and ended up based out of Portland, Floater, which also happens to be one of my son Cale's favorite bands. So there you go. Early to mid-90s Steve, when I stopped knowing anything about music. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Gary. Gary, good afternoon. How's it going?
There's blue skies over Springfield and early spring. What could go wrong with the world?
Do you want a list?
It'll all be fine. Hey, a quick question for you. Do you know when Oregon's Pro Day is scheduled?
Actually, they announced it today, and like a brat, I ignored it. So we've got our top experts working on it. But I think via email they announced it today. Tell you the truth, when it comes to stuff like that, let's just say I shut down a little because, so we'll look for it and, see if we can find out. I know they, talked about what the schedule is for spring practice.
Right.
But,
I saw that.
It's March 12th.
Yes.
Oh, so Thursday. There you go.
Okay. Do you know if it's going to be in the morning or the afternoon?
2:45. I would assume that's the afternoon.
Well, you know, they never are secretive enough on some of this stuff. Excellent. Okay. Just a quick thank you to your compadre for highlighting the Gales versus Pepperdine game. That was one of the best basketball games I've ever seen in terms of just two evenly matched teams with two equally matched superstars going at each other, bucket for bucket. It's one of those things that you hear people who are poo-pawing the West Coast Conference, and you think, gosh, maybe they better take another look at them.
Well, they've got some good players, but, you know, the problem is, on the whole, when it comes to making noise in the tournament, if it's not Gonzaga, there's a whole bunch of silence.
It starts with just getting one team in. And then a couple of years later, you get two teams in. And then a couple of years later, you get three teams in. And this is called progress.
Yeah, I'm getting too old for that kind. I need it to happen a lot faster.
That's what the alumni say. Hey, and a quick question for you. Did you have a chance to take the old coconut out and take some practice?
We did not do free throws this weekend. We had basketball on the brain, but we still have the coconut here to serve as a reminder that we need to coconut up and get out there.
Can I make an inquiry that would, I think, help your shooting percentages? And that would be utilizing a two-hand stabilization system a la Rick Barry.
Oh, you want us to go underhand?
I'm thinking you're standing at the free throw line, you're checking it. Two hands are better guidance than one, right?
I don't know. I like the Bill Bradley two-handed push and out of a crouch, which was the way he used to shoot free throws that I always emulated.
We'll look for this on YouTube soon?
Yes. Coming to insane people near you.
After the games are over, okay.
Right. Have a good one, Gare.
You got her.
Yeah, who was it what Nick was talking about? Colby Ross played 47 minutes, had 43 points. Not to mention, by the way, 8 points, 5 assists. Although he did turn it over 7 times. And Jordan Ford, by the way, when you make 17 buckets in a game, That's a lot. He had 42 points. By the way, you know how many times he turned it over? None.
Yeah, it's a well, in the light 'em up segment, you like to talk about the good things
that they did.
You don't want to talk about the turnovers, or maybe you bring up a steal or a block or something like that, but it's not a time for negativity. Unless you have one assist in 50 minutes played, and then it's like, dude, pass the ball, be a good teammate here. This game probably wouldn't have gotten to double overtime if you hadn't taken 55 shots. Well, you didn't take 55 shots, but it seemed like you took 55 shots.
That's a lot of that's a lot of shots, I'll tell you. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. Yeah, Pritchard in his last game before the MKA faithful had a heck of a game, and he was in attack mode. I think during the pregame meal. Because he was just driving the ball with tenacity. And, you know, he made 44% from downtown on 4 of 9. But he played a physical game. Well, you know Stanford was going to be physical because that's what they do. When we were talking to Scott Reese, he was like, Stanford doesn't even like the game to get into the 70s. And that was just the second time all year they'd given up 80 points in a regulation game. The high was 81. They did give up 82 another time, but that was in overtime. So when the Ducks really needed it, and, you know, from the Stanford point of view, while they pretty much exhausted any chance they had for an at-large bid, although I guess if they were to make a run all the way to the conference final and get three wins, get to 23, it's not totally. I think Lunardi still has them among the last four in, although. That seems, although it's so difficult to gauge because of the landscape and just some of the mediocrity from like the third and fourth team in some of these conferences on down. So Lunardi has Stanford, anyway, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. He's got him playing Indiana in a play-in game in Dayton next week. All right, let's take a phone call to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We go bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How you doing?
Good evening, Steve Dannon. I want to say, what a victory for the Oregon Ducks, for the boys and girls. What did you like about your favorite part?
All right, thanks a lot, Steven. Just happened to be talking about it. I think what was the most encouraging about the Duck men is that's their best back-to-back performances on a weekend in conference all season. I don't even think it's close. It was a demolition of Cal, who's an inferior opponent. Stanford had beaten them and showed they could be a tough matchup down at Maples when they played the first matchup in Palo Alto. In a case like this, Oregon went into the half leading by 5. And the bottom line is Stanford never led in the game. The game was tied for a minute and a half. The Ducks led for 38 and a half minutes. They got that lead out to 15. And if not for what I considered some ticky-tack calls at the end, where they put the Cardinal on the line with the clock stopped when it got down to 7, there was never a moment. Like, if that was a horse race, the write-up would have said, Ducks by 6 lengths in hand, never in doubt. As for the women, they played their best game of the tournament in the final against Stanford, and kind of re-reminded Stanford that this conference historically is theirs, but not right now. And you beat Stanford twice in 1 year by 30, including, again, Oregon played Stanford on a national stage on ESPN. They played UConn on a national stage on ESPN. They played Stanford again on a national stage on ESPN. And they kicked ass all three times. And I've said this a bunch of times, not to be a broken record, but they go into UConn, they see all those banners. They go into Pauley Pavilion, see all those banners. They see the national spotlight of ESPN. And I've said this, where others are intimidated, they're inspired. They feed off it. They love it. They live for it. And they get treated like rock stars. And now they're going to get two more games at home and head for Moda as a Sweet 16 team. Another two wins with a chance to grab the ultimate prize in the sport where they excel. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring it. No, what am I going to say? How about a better idea?
Let's bring it to the commercial.
Let's get to a commercial. We'll be back. More sports talk. Plus, a Coors Light update next. 95.3, The Score.
Get up. 95.3, The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3, The Score with you wherever you go.
No timeouts remaining for Belmont. 9.5 seconds to go. Murphy. Back to Kunkel. 5 to go. Scanlon on the reverse with 3.8. 2 seconds to go. Javion Eaves can't get the shot off. Belmont wins its first OVC tournament championship since 2015.
Yeah, that was a fun finish. The Bruins of Belmont beat Murray State on a perfectly designed backdoor play between Tyler Scanlon with a money bounce pass to Adam Kunkel for the winner. For first year coach Casey Alexander, you're going dancing. That was Alex Perlman and Sidney Johnson with the call on ESPN. So since Gary hung up talking about the improvement in the West Coast Conference, and I'm like, that wasn't really my analysis, but it's what I'm thinking now. I went, while we were on break, through every conference in the WCC. And since Gonzaga took over the conference in 1999, first of all, only St. Mary's in 2010 has won a second tournament game. They went to the Sweet 16.
They were the biggest deal in the Bay Area for doing that. Like, I think Stanford and Cal had
the audacity to challenge the Zags.
Yeah, it was just like the Stanford and Cal had kind of made runs every now and then. Like, people in the Bay Area didn't really pay attention to college basketball. Like, the Lopez twins were just like funny. And
yeah, but so, that was also 7 years before that.
Right. I'm saying that was my experience with college basketball growing up, was the Lopez twins and then this run that St. Mary's made to the Sweet 16 one time. Like, they had news crews out there filming them as they landed back in Oakland or
really?
Whatever. Oh, yeah. They turned them in. They were celebrities. Like, it was not just like they were the Cinderella story, because they were, I think they had to have been like a 12 or a 13 seed that just like upset the 5, won a second game, made it to the Sweet 16. This is the biggest thing ever. Just talking about them for the 3 or 4 days it was in between games. They were huge. It was such a huge deal.
And it's crazy that it's already been 10 years ago, because, well, and this year they're 25 wins, but 11-5 and third place. That is not a formula to be a third team. BYU was ranked in the top 15. So, yeah, under Randy Bennett, they went 11-3 in league, 28-6 overall, and they were a 10 seed. And the big one was when they knocked off number 2 Villanova. And then they got killed by Baylor. But, for example,
Villanova losing a big game in the tournament? I've never heard that one before.
Actually, until they have won 2 of the last 4 national titles, so you might want to go easy on that.
It's funnier if you don't explain that they're better now. Matthew Dellavedova was on that St. Mary's team.
So St. Mary's won to the Sweet 16 in 2010. Pepperdine's done nothing. San Francisco's gone out in the first round. Santa Clara, who pulled one of the original great upsets in the tournament with Steve Nash when they beat Arizona, that was a million years ago. They haven't been in a quarter century. Loyola Marymount, we're now celebrating the 30th year since the tragic death of Hank Gathers and that big run they made to the Sweet 16. Bo Kimble shooting the foul shot left-handed in honor of his friend. Except they haven't been to the tournament since then in 1990. San Diego's not a... And by the way, BYU, this is only their ninth year as part of the West Coast Conference Basketball Conference. They haven't even been in the tournament since 2015. I don't think BYU has made a run since, like, Danny Ainge in the early 80s. I'm not saying that for effect, but he had that legendary coast-to-coast buzzer beater that you always see up there with, you know, Bryce Drew against Mississippi in 97, the Leitner turnaround, Tyus Edney against Missouri in 95. Let's see, BYU in the Mountain West. Oh, I guess they did make a Sweet 16 under Dave Rose, but they were in the Mountain West. Otherwise, it was out in the first round, out in the first round, out in the first round. Yeah, the last time BYU, aside from their last year in the Mountain West when they made the Sweet 16, they made the Elite Eight in 81, the Danny Ainge team I was talking about. So, Gary, don't get your hopes up for a second West Coast Conference team all of a sudden to rise up. It happens once a decade, maybe. It's the Zags League. Everybody else is on borrowed time. I'll root for Gonzaga over BYU. This is, by the way, season one under, what's his last name, Pope? What the hell became of Dave Rose? He just retired, right? Yeah, I think so. He's not coaching anywhere now. Correct me if I'm, he didn't go to the NBA. I'm not totally blowing this, am I? But, yeah, this Mark Pope dude, they're a really good offensive team. I mean, efficiency-wise, they're top 5. Points per game, they're top 10. So I'm not taking them light. But Pope is a guy who came from Utah Valley State, where especially his last couple years, they were really, not Utah State, Utah Valley. The Wolverines, by the way. I think played more of an up-tempo. But, like I said, in that conference, until proven otherwise, oh, it's a one-horse race. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also hit us up on the text line, 321-0824. Try us on Twitter at 953 the score for the station, at Sports Talk 953 for me, and for Nick at Rick Nodges. So I wake up yesterday, and I'm getting text from my stepbrother and some friends back east that there was a special, I guess, on the MSG. It's no longer MSG. I think it's the YES Network. It was almost 50 years ago, 49 years ago, the biggest sporting event of my lifetime. Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, the first fight at the Garden. And I posted it on Facebook, got a lot of good responses because, first of all, you can't understand it if you weren't there, which means you got to be at least 57 to have remembered, because it was all-encompassing. I mean, I have some really vivid memories of my childhood, but I could smell Alden's Meat Market. And we were in there, and the owner had a son who played ball with us, and he was a big Frazier fan. And I'm 10, and he's antagonizing me. He didn't like Ali. He didn't like his whole attitude. It was very polarizing. They were, and let me tell you something. We always joke about if X happened, then Twitter would break. If that fight took place now, the world would end. It would literally snap in two, fall into a black hole, and life as we know it would be over.
Really?
There were ads on TV. Now, obviously, growing up in the shadow of Manhattan where the fight was being held, when Madison Square Garden was literally a sports mecca, it's, you know, where the Knicks played, where the Rangers played, they were both good. The Garden was still only 3.5, 4 years old. They had great concerts there. They had The NIT finals were still held there. And at the time, you know, there were times in the 60s where certain teams passed on the NCAAs to play in the NIT for the chance to win it and get to Madison Square Garden, as ridiculous as that sounds now. And plus, they were holding this fight and just the ads on TV, split screens, and Joe Frazier tantalizing Ali, calling him, "Hey, Clay, 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 what'd you call me, Frazier?" And just, it was amazing. And no pay-per-view in those days, no closed circuit. So what we had to do was either what I did, my dad was at the fight with a buddy of his, and I was sitting at home. And remember, fights start late. There's an undercard. So for a 10-year-old, it was like the fight started at 10:15, and I kept falling asleep because WINS, 10:10 wins, give us 10 minutes, we'll give you the world, was providing updates every 10 minutes. And you would hear, now we go live ringside, Ali Frazier at the Garden, and whoever it was. Well, the first round, Ali stopped Frazier with a straight left, and he was dancing off the ropes. And then all of a sudden, the horror. They gave the last update, and in the 15th round, the left hook put Ali on the deck for the first time in his career. And I was almost ready to cry. I was frigging devastated when Ali lost to Smokin' Joe. It was, at the time, it was probably the most heartbreaking thing that had ever happened in my life. I just, borderline inconsolable. And I remember normally when my dad went to games at the Garden, I would hear, we had an electric garage opener, so I'd hear him come home. I was so exhausted, I didn't even get up to read the program till the next morning. And my dad said where they were sitting, Frazier walked about 8 feet past them after the fight, and he'd won, and my dad said, I had never seen anything. His head was misshapen. I mean, those guys, those three fights, in 71, then in 73 for the right to fight Foreman, who had knocked out Frazier to win the heavyweight title, and then the Thrilla in Manila in 75, those guys did damage to each other, serious physical damage.
When you said hit the deck, I wondered if early boxing matches were actually fought on like wooden planks and like it was actually a deck that you fell down to. And then I was like, no, that can't be it. They would never actually fight on wood. Like that doesn't seem very
safe.
Doesn't seem
logical.
And then I looked up the origins of hit the deck, and it was, it's taken a complete 180 from early in the 1900s of like get up and get moving on your day. You've got to literally hit the deck, like let's get out of bed, to now it's meant for protection, or like you've fallen on the ground at some point. So just a total 180 from getting up to now dropping down. Very strange. Not many phrases have this kind of versatility.
Hit the deck, huh?
Yeah, had me going. I just had to think about it for a second.
I almost wish you asked me, guess what the origin is. I'm not saying I'd have been right, but I would have said, let's go to break. Give me some time to ponder this. All right. And by the way, on cue, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Why is Bobby Bonilla trending?
Is it Bobby Bonilla Day? Oh, no, that's July 1st,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't even want to get into it now. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll have the tweet of the day and wrap up a Monday next. 95.3, The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo.
Hi, host Steve. I'm confused. I'm Nick Rogers. I'm at the Coors Light Frost Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light Mountain Cold Refreshment. That is made to chill. What have we got on Twitter today? Not a whole lot. I wasn't on the Twitter too much today. We got a great tweet from @Dame_Lillard. That would be Damian Lillard. The Portland Pilots hit a buzzer beater in the NCAA in their women's, is it the WCC tournament for the Portland Pilots? I don't know what conference they're in. Portland hit a incredible game winner against Gonzaga to win, the WCC tournament. So there it is. They take down a top-ranked Gonzaga team. They're moving on. And as they're celebrating, they end up almost perfectly recreating the iconic Damian Lillard pose from the Oklahoma City Thunder game.
Bye-bye.
Not the bye-bye one. It's the deadpan the Lillard shot from the bottom of the pile.
Oh, right.
And so the Portland Pilots tweeted, "Does that look familiar, Dame Lillard?" And he gave it a couple of laughing emojis, so that was very good. But our tweet of the day, which I want to get to because I think we should spend some time talking about it. The new LA Rams logo is horrible. It's horrible. I don't know if it's an unofficial logo, if it's an alternate logo, if it's just a leak of something that went out for the Rams to be able to, I don't know, do something with. I've almost several times said the Clippers because it actually looks like LAC. Like the horn of the Rams that's supposed to be on there comes from the A all the way around, looks like a C. One of the funnier tweets I saw, I forgot from who it was, but it was, if the Rams and Chargers are going to still share a stadium in LA, they might as well share a logo, which is, that was very good. But our tweet of the day from today is from Christian DeAndrea at Trains Island. At Train Island on Twitter, who tweeted an article from SB Nation. The Rams' new alternate logo leaked this weekend, and oh, buddy, does it look like the kind of thing your worst uncle would buy for you at the drugstore after forgetting your birthday? Just an off-brand. It looks so bad. It looks really bad.
I tell you what, a great test would have been just show it and ask, what sports team is this? I don't know if I'd have gotten it.
I would have said LA Chargers before, because that it looks like a bolt of lightning a little bit. There's absolutely a C that gets involved there. It's really bad. So thanks to Train Island for the refreshing tweet of the day. Follow us on Twitter at 953thescore, where you too can look at this monstrosity. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. Steve is on Twitter at SportsTalk953. Don't be a jerk. Just do it. Actually, I saw somebody put it on the NFL subreddit where they did an analytical deep dive into the logo and why it's so bad. And there's just like multiple lines that aren't parallel with each other. The bottom part of the L doesn't match up with the middle part of the A. Things are like off slanted, but like not parallel to each other. There's multiple times where like there's layers going over and not touching up and meeting up. And just it's very bad. It's a very bad logo.
It is so much more the Chargers than the Rams. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's confusing. Like somebody said, where's the necessity? I got to be honest, the Ram colors are cool.
Well,
when they do the right uniform combo, they're as sweet as anybody,
The royal blue with the yellow is a fantastic color combination.
I like three different combos.
I don't know what they're doing moving on. Because I know they've been so upset because the St. Louis Rams had the gold in their uniforms that the LA Rams didn't want to use because they wanted to change their colors to blue and white, pretty specifically, to not have the gold involved. And there's NFL rules about how often you can and cannot change your uniform colors and everything like that. And so the Rams were due, just so happens they're due when they're opening their new stadium. And boy, if this is where they're going, it's not good. I saw another one that it looks like they wanted to be purple and gold with like a bit of aqua or teal mixed in.
Need an intervention.
Yeah.
So the soft one, Dave Mahler up in Seattle. I actually forgot who he works for now. KJR. Is it still KJR?
I think so.
Whoa, gurgly stomach. Here's his question of the day on Twitter. If I offered you $15 million in cash, would you switch your sports allegiance to your hated rival? $15 million? First of all, my answer was, to quote Led Zepp, in the days of my youth, I'd probably have been stupid enough to consider no. Right now, if somebody says I'll pay off your mortgage, I'd be like, yeah, go Red Sox. I don't care.
What are they doing supporting A-Rod after all these years? Brian Cashman's an idiot. That team is horrible. You would flip so fast. It'd be so fun.
12% of the people said no. Liars.
Yes, that is
liars. True. Somebody shows up at your house and says, here's $15 million. And if you're a Seahawks fan, now you're a Niners fan.
Yeah.
That's it?
All right.
That's it?
Right,
you're telling me.
Because it's not just changing all of your sports allegiances to your rivals. It's just one. You just have to give up one team that you have
Oh,
to,
is it one?
Did he say all sports teams or just a rival?
So he went to, it looks like it's all encompassing.
Okay.
Seahawk fans become Niner fans. Husky fans become Oregon fans. $15 million.
It's $50 million. I'd do it. Yeah, $15 million. Yeah. I wouldn't have to work anymore.
As a matter of fact, if the guy was on my front porch, by the time he finished his sentence, I would have the briefcase of cash, door shut, said, deal, go on to the next one.
Sir, would you like $15 million? Yes, I would like $15 million.
And as he's at the third house, I'm in my car, and he's like, where are you going? To buy new team gear.
I'm going to prove to you. I need to make sure this cash checks.
I'm going to prove to you how on board I am with this idea. And by the way, how stupid you are, because you could have showed up with $150,000. And like I said, when I was in my 20s, 30s, even early 40s, it meant something. And now it'd be like, let's see, I could change my life and root for a team who wouldn't care if I dropped dead tomorrow. Just like the other team I used to root for.
My probably first question would be, how many other people have you asked? Because if you have, and they've said yes, the odds of this guy still having $15 million, very low. So you definitely have to make sure that not too many people have been asked the question, and then you got to get to the bank as quickly as you can. Or if you got the mobile deposit on your phone, something like that, you got to get that check in the bank.
Here's the next follow-up question. Which is the hardest one? So, like, for example, you're
college.
A Giants fan, you got to root for the Dodgers.
Yeah, I can make it
you're
work.
A Duck
They're gonna
fan.
They're going to be good this year.
You're a Duck fan. Is your hated the Beavs or the Huskies? As a California person, is it Stanford or USC? I don't know.
When I came here and I started school, it was USC. It's grown slightly more to UW, but I think if I had to pick, I think I still, just being a Bay Area guy, I hate the LA schools a little bit more. So maybe it'd be USC.
I just realized I can't do it. I can't root for the Flyers. I honestly don't think
really?
Even for 15. I'm now having an internal battle with myself. I think I would, but that would be it. That would be the toughest one. Not even close. Not even a second thought. I could root for UW, Notre Dame in football. I don't really have a hated college basketball team. I could root for the Celtics. I could root for the Cowboys.
As Oregon, it would be all encompassing, everything Oregon. Now you root for everything for UW. Or USC or whoever you hate.
So that idiot who poisoned
Notre Dame.
The trees.
It'd be Notre Dame for you. Could you root for Notre Dame?
I'm telling you.
$15 million.
Easily over the Flyers. The Flyers are my sticking point. They're, everything else
Cowboys,
is a breeze. A breeze
really?
Compared to the Flyers. I think we might want to continue this conversation tomorrow. Have yourselves a great Monday, everybody. Thanks for listening to Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.